Spike Mason, my guest in the studio on the saxophone. He's also a composer, an improviser, a teacher. He studied with Lee Konitz and Roger Frampton and has performed all over the world, from England to Canada, from the US to Turkey. He's appeared on over 75 albums as a musician and currently leads his own band, Oxymetric. Spike Mason, welcome.
Yeah, thanks, Ryan.
You had a very musical heritage, your background, your family. Tell us about that.
That's been, it's really interesting actually. That first track, Zena Mae Perkins, is my the name of my grandmother. And I think everyone has those sort of stories when you start looking back in your heritage. And she actually, I suppose it was a family secret. It's not so much now that I think everyone's died who was involved, but she actually found out that that was her name on the day that she got married. Now, what had happened was she hadn't actually even been adopted. She'd just been put into another family. Her mother was a concert pianist who couldn't have a child out of wedlock back then. When my grandmother was born, she was put in another family and given another name. And the woman who was her mother became like an aunt or something. And on the day she was getting married, her father, who wasn't her father, I suppose, had to tell her that her name was actually Zena Mae Perkins, because if she'd got married under this other name, she wouldn't be legally married. And the whole story came out. You know, she was getting married and she has this incredible, you know, bomb dropped on her.
All of a sudden she's someone else.
She's someone else.
How did the husband-to-be take that news?
Well, apparently he actually knew, it's complicated, but I suppose her father, who wasn't really her father, had told the groom the day before or something, and he was sort of cool with it. I mean, it was just a name change.
Mm.
But yeah, that's, and my grandparents, my grandfather passed away a while ago, and my grandmother's become very ill, and so this album was being written at the time when all those things were sort of happening, so it's dedicated to them, and there's some references to them on the album.
And she's not the only musical influence on you as far as your family is concerned either, is
no she? No, well, yeah, as I say, well, this great-grandmother was a concert pianist, and then, of course, my grandmother grew up playing the piano and used to play for silent films and that sort of thing, and my mother plays piano as well. And I think, although my dad's an accountant, I think he would really like to have been a musician,
yeah,
you know, if he'd been given the opportunity, but things didn't work out like that for him, I suppose.
Spike, who are your musical heroes, and what are the most important things you've learnt from them?
Oh, far out. That's a huge question, isn't it? I suppose, you know, there's so many. Looking back through, I suppose, you know, I've decided to be a jazz musician, or for whatever reason, that's sort of been something that's just burned within me. I've just moved in that direction. So, you know, heading back through the guys that have sort of been the architects of this style, it's just endless. You know, they all bring something that adds to this incredible rich history of this music. And so, you know, I think if I can talk about who I'm listening to at the moment, I've been listening to a lot of Wayne Shorter. I got the opportunity to hear him a couple of times when he came to Melbourne. When was that? 2 years ago. And I think I've been listening to him non-stop for a couple of years, just as much as I can. So, but, you know, it's just endless. I mean, you know, you're even constantly hearing of new guys, and there's always new stuff to listen to. So it's an endless pursuit.
If you weren't a musician, Spike,
mm.
What other occupation or vocation do you think you would have chosen?
Yeah, wow. You know, it's funny, Warren Marsh, who played with Lenny Tristano and Lee Konitz, he was a swimming pool cleaner. That's what he did during the day. He didn't like teaching because he sort of wanted to keep music a pure thing that he just did. So he cleaned swimming pools, you know, to earn a buck when he wasn't playing. And sometimes I think that's not a bad way to live sometimes, you know. I mean, my life is basically playing and teaching. But sometimes I think, you know, perhaps I could do just about anything, really. But I think I would always, even if I wasn't playing for a living, I think there'd be something in me that would need to externalize itself. Maybe not even in music. I mean, maybe it would be painting or writing short stories or anything, I'm not sure. But for whatever reason, like I said before, this path or this direction seems to be the one that I'm on. But yeah, that's a good question.
I got you with that one, didn't I?
Yeah, it's nice.
Tell us about Blue Corvus.
Yeah, Blue Corvus. That's funny, actually. I was just at Warwick Alder's place. We were rehearsing some of the tunes, and he said, "Blue Corvus? What's a corvus, you know?" And it's a bit of an involved story, but basically the corvus is the genus of crows. The main theme of this tune actually comes from an album and Alan Lomax recording entitled Murderer's Home. And so the very distant sort of relationship of corvus is Murderer's Home. I thought of a murder of crows, and then the word crow, the genus name of that is Corvus. And because it's like a blues, Blue Corvus. That's
excellent.
How I got the title.
It's the creative process of Spike Mason there. As a musician and improviser, how do you measure the success of your craft, Spike?
Measure the success.
So yeah. you go to work, you either go to the bandstand or you go to the recording studio and you come away from that, and how do you know whether you've done well?
I suppose, to be honest, I try even not to think in those sort of terms, really. I think I'm trying to be dedicated to the creative process that just allows me to create something instantly and not really judge it. That may sound a bit weird, I suppose, as it's coming out of my mouth. It sounds weird, but
I think I know what you mean. You don't really want to be the judge of your own work. You're trying to be as express yourself as freely as you possibly can and let other people do the judging.
Yeah, there's lots of what I call extra musical things which take up part of the creative process. I mean, especially if you're working in a venue, you're thinking of the dollars and the client's happy and yada, yada, yada. And I try to eliminate all those sorts of things and just focus solely on reacting to what's happening around me and creating something unique. So I suppose I'm really dedicated to that. Developing a facility that enables me to play what I hear in my head in an instant, you know. And so if I can achieve that, whether I'm on the bandstand or at home playing, you know, to my kids or whatever, or in a studio, if I can achieve that in any given moment, then I feel like I'm, I suppose, succeeding or achieving that goal.
Your website, which the address is
spikemason.com.
You constantly refer to yourself as an improviser.
Yeah.
So my question to you is, what do you think of the term jazz?
Jazz. Yeah, it's, you know, it's crazy. It seems to be like, I remember there was a photograph at the con. It was like a poster or something, and it was a tree, and it started out with the root at the bottom, and then a trunk, and then the branches just spread out, and someone had placed all the photos of all the great jazz musicians on the branches. And I suppose that's what it's like. It sort of starts, I don't know exactly how it starts, but it does, it spreads out, people are going this way and going that way, and it's just incredible. I mean, it just keeps spreading in all these different directions and different influences and different things like that. So I suppose the best thing about that, or the definition of jazz, is something that seems to evolve and grow. It's always been that type of music, like I said before, with the history, as you listen to this music, you can hear everybody influencing everyone else, and music from different cultures and different time periods, and now electronic things and all that just seems to be adding to those branches.
So are you comfortable with people referring to Oxymetrics music as jazz?
Yeah, I think so. I think there's definitely, I made a conscious choice to follow the tradition of acoustic instruments playing live in a space and recording it live. That's something that's, pretty well particular to jazz, I suppose. I mean, it happens in other music, but that's one of the ways, I suppose, I'm following one of those branches. I mean, there's lots of great music being made, even by guys in my band, as electronic music. But for myself, I've decided to continue down the acoustic path of that connection of someone just physically making a sound and bringing it out. And the way these tunes are written, it's quite funny. When you look at the charts, they're sort of quite simple, but there's a lot of room to move in them. So I think that'll...
And chicken feathers from The One Duck.
That's right.
So tell us about, Spike, tell us about this particular piece, Chicken Feathers from One Duck.
Yeah, I suppose...
From The One Duck.
From The One Duck, yeah. That was actually a misquote from a Les McCann song. In fact, I'm not even sure that... I don't even know what the actual words were, but that's what I used to think the words were. This tune was actually written after listening to some music from Roger Frampton. When I did my Masters at the Con a few years ago, I did my thesis was on Roger Frampton's saxophone playing.
Right.
So, there were a couple of little phrases here and there, and this tune came about from listening to him for a long time and doing a lot of transcribing and analysis and things like that.
I might ask you further on that
because
Roger Frampton, I think, is one of our great composers and very much not underrated in the jazz world, but certainly just generally one of the most underrated composers.
Yeah.
Put him up there with people like John Sangster.
Mm.
What's your view on Roger Frampton, given that you've obviously studied his music quite deeply?
He was just an incredible musician. You mentioned before I studied with Lee Konitz, and whenever he came out here, he would want to work with Roger, and he would just say, you know, the guy's world class. I'd put him up against anyone, you know, who I play with, which was, you know, it was great to hear that, especially because I was studying with Roger at the time. And but as a saxophone player, I think he was, you know, incredibly underrated. I mean, he used to play a lot, and I was able to get... He only did a handful of recordings, but I was able to get quite a few more from Jeremy Sawkins. I play in Jeremy's band at the moment, and he used to play in Roger's band.
Yep.
Had all these old cassettes, so I did a lot of listening, and he would write music that was complicated in some ways, but very simple in other ways. But the way he could play through changes, it was just incredible. I mean, he would play through the most difficult changes and just play the sweetest melodies you could imagine. And he, you could, you know, you just, once you look at what he plays, sometimes it feels like or sounds like it's really outside and really strange, but he was right in there. He was right very deep inside the harmony, but just could turn phrases and create melodies that were quite astounding. So, yeah, I have a huge amount of respect for him as a musician. It was a real honour, actually, to be able to spend some time and really study and look at his approach.
A sad loss for the jazz world.
Yeah, indeed.
Spike, I'd like to thank you very much for coming into the studio.
Yeah, thank you.
It's been a pleasure talking with you.
Yeah, it's been great.